This is an ABC podcast.
You're listening to The Country Hour on ABC Radio South Australia and Broken Hill.
Hello and welcome to The Country Hour. I'm Isabella Pittaway. Well done for making it to Friday. On the program today, you're going to hear how Rabobank expects most Australian farmers will at least break even this year, despite the shock to commodity demand caused by the global coronavirus pandemic. And how's this for something a little bit different? How can you enjoy some pizza and beer on a Friday night when you're isolating on a cattle station?
So we thought we'd get all the pizzas together and see if they're interested. We can fly them out so they don't have to leave the properties. We still have our social distance when we land there. And also, because of the release of the liquor licensing, now we're able to take alcohol with us as takeaway and they can receive their alcohol. Just everybody's happy and something different. And their children will come out running out, pizza, pizza.
Flying pizzas and beer coming up on the Country Hour after the weather. But first today, the wool market this week has suffered its largest weekly fall in percentage terms in 17 years, losing 155 cents or 10% of its total, 10.7% rather, of its total value. Chinese buyers went cold after realising selling centres would continue to operate amid the coronavirus crisis, having last week bought up big in fear that centres would close like others around the globe. Andrew Howes, District Wool Manager for Elders in Hamilton, says the big falls caught people by surprise.
It was pretty stunning. A lot of the buyers not quite sure what level to start at or finish at. Some orders they've obviously had that were a lot higher that they needed to finish off, which can be tricky just to know which lot to buy for them. And so there was some money there, but others they were really just guessing as to where they needed to be and a long way away from what we were expecting.
And the week before, Andrew, the market had actually been a lot more positive. But was that a case of China being concerned that Australian markets, like every other country, were actually going to stop selling and China had been trying to buy up, but then realising this week that markets were going to continue and then pulling back?
I think you're right, Angus. That's what we heard too, that the Chinese were expecting that sales might be closed, like South Africa and Uruguay and New Zealand. And so a bit surprised, and also the sale 42 that normally be a recess had become a sale to make up for the week that we lost with the computer system being infected for the exporters. So that certainly put a spanner in the works for them. And at the same time, you know, we'd been hearing reports that they'd been having cancelled contracts cancelled on them for garments and wool top and yarn and the like. So having to pay out for wool but not really getting anything in at the other end. So that was a bit of a shock. So they certainly put up the shutters. There was no one buying from Europe. It was really China on its own and just being, you know, probably pretty picky about what they were buying and the levels and being very, very cautious. So it was a fairly flat atmosphere down there.
So that's where we're at with border closures, meaning we are totally reliant on, or we're always heavily reliant, but we're totally reliant on China at the moment to buy our wool.
Mm, exactly. And look, China is starting to turn the corner, if you believe all the reports you're reading, but still retail is very, very slow. They had been hoping for some government stimulus, but I think that's still a way off for textiles. So uniform incentives where they buy fabric for uniforms or make uniforms, that's still probably maybe a couple of months away, fingers crossed. But they're concentrating on more bigger ticket items to stimulate the economy. So not a lot of joy for them, retail in their own country and orders being cancelled around the world. So it's very, very tough.
From an outsider's, a novice's point of view, it does seem that when shopping centres are shut down, not just in Australia but right across the world, that retail sector is going to take a huge hit, and the demand for wool is surely going to have to be slashed, and that's going to be a huge downside for price. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, no, definitely. Look, there still will be wool and garments available to purchase one way or the other this winter in the Northern Hemisphere, whether it's online or whether some shops are open, there will be winter garments there to buy. But certainly retail, you know, when shops are closing, shopping centres are closing, it's going to be very, very tough. China will probably be the first one to come out of it retail-wise, so certainly Europe and America. America's, you know, looks like it's getting worse, but China seems to be coming out of it. But it will be tough. I couldn't see retail shops opening until there's some sort of vaccine, but online will certainly still operate for the winter period, which is still a little bit way off for the Northern Hemisphere, so it's summer over there, but there will be winter garments to buy, but you wouldn't expect it to be fantastic sale results.
Now, in this week's sales, we saw a massive pass-in rate, I think around the 45% mark. Mm. If you were advising a farmer who may have just shorn or who's about to shear soon on what they should do with their wool, should they sell now expecting further downside, long-term downside, or should they try and hold on?
It's a tricky question. It'll depend on their own circumstance. Ideally for the industry, if we can keep wool off the market for a period of time, whether it be 6 months or longer, that would certainly help. Obviously, there's people that need to sell, so there is that facility now. We've been trialling online auctions this week to help, so we can still have auctions. But if you're in the position where you don't have to sell and you can hold off, that would certainly help the industry. And there's probably, you know, going to be some upside at some point. I don't know exactly when, but could be 6 months or more, but if you can hold off, that would certainly help.
And then, are there concerns that if everyone who doesn't need to sell says we won't sell, that we're going to end up with quite a substantial stockpile that's going to take a long time to work through?
Yes, we will. So, you know, stockpiles aren't great news. It's just sort of more of an ordered run through of wool rather than having big dumps of it at times when the buyers are all not buying, so which is what you don't want. There will be a turnaround at some point. We certainly don't want to build up too big a stockpile. The supply of wool has come back, but certainly with people not buying, it's very hard to cope with huge offerings.
That was Andrew Howes from Elders speaking to Angus Verley. It's 12 past 12 on the Country Hour. Well, despite the shock to commodity demand caused by the global coronavirus pandemic, farmland prices are holding up, interest rates remain low, and Rabobank expects most Australian farmers will at least break even this year. Kath Sullivan spoke with the bank's Tim Hunt about how the farm sector is travelling in what's already proved a tough year.
While China's getting better, the rest of the world is falling ill, and that is still 70% of ag exports.
We might go through the commodities in the moment, but a couple of overarching themes include the Australian dollar, which has fallen significantly against the US. Isn't that a good thing?
It's a great thing for agricultural exporters, Kath, and a real get-out-of-jail-free card for the Australian agricultural industry in this crisis. We've seen the Aussie dollar already come off around 11%. We expect we'll head down to around 55 cents against the US dollar, and that's meaning that the price falls we see on world markets that are borne in full by many of our competing farmers are going to be offset by around half once that's translated to the Australian farm gate. So demand's slowing, world prices are coming down, but we're getting a huge offset from the falling Aussie dollar.
We're seeing oil fall as well, which a major input for a lot of Australian ag.
Oil is a double-edged sword, and the way that cuts depends what sector you're in. If you're using it in diesel on farm in most operations, obviously that is going to result in a cost fall. It's a problem, though, when we come to the sugar industry, where the slump in oil prices is going to see Brazil pump a lot more of its cane into sugar rather than ethanol, and that has seen world sugar prices fall sort of 25% or more since this crisis erupted. So even low oil prices can be good or bad, depending on where you sit.
So sugar, one of the hardest hit, but what about other sectors?
But the hardest hit ones are the non-essential products. So in the fibres complex, in US dollar terms, we've seen cotton and wool prices come off at least 20%. Sugar, due to its link through to oil, has also been very hard hit. The best performer has actually been the grain sector, where prices, particularly for wheat, have gone up as disruptions to ports in Argentina and Brazil have limited their ability to export grains and oilseed, and as the Ukraine and Russia start to talk about possibly banning exports of wheat as they look to control domestic inflation, and that's put a risk premium into world markets. So we have the whole spectrum from significant price falls to actually price rises, which really highlights the complexity of this issue for agriculture.
Are you seeing a significant impact on the red meat and dairy sectors?
Dairy, we are starting to see demand fall out, particularly in the Chinese market. This year, we expect Chinese dairy consumption to actually fall in year-on-year terms due to disruptions in food service, supply chain issues there, but also falling incomes. And that's the first time in many decades that Chinese consumption will have fallen. That'll result in reduced purchases from markets like Australia and put downward pressure on prices.
And Tim, what about the impact of interventionist policies that we're seeing? Things like pretty much an overnight end to the hospitality sector here in Australia and in other places as well. Things like an end to air travel. How has that impacted on Australian ag?
Negatively. But agriculture's lucky to have diverse markets. So the shutdown of food service industries, which is occurring really from Beijing to New York and every city in between, has obviously resulted in a slowdown in sales through those channels. And that's a real problem if you're selling a high-end meat or wines or seafood that aren't likely to be consumed at home. At the same time, ag is lucky in Australia. We also service the retail markets. There we've seen a short-term lift from panic buying as people stock up on everything from pasta to UHT milk. And we'll see some offset as people cook more at home for the next 6 months or so. So those disruptions are clearly negative. We're just lucky that we have diverse markets, and that means ag's going to get through this a lot in a lot better shape than many industries.
And just before we wrap up, what about investment in agriculture? I would assume that we would expect that to slow, but given that it is one of the better performing sectors, does that make it attractive to perhaps investors that wouldn't have typically considered it?
We expect to see on-farm investors from owner-operators to probably slow next year, as they do see some erosion of their profits through this. But we'll see continued export interest from outside the sector at a time when many asset classes have proved volatile and crashed in many cases by 20-30%. Ag land prices have held up pretty well. Interest rates remain low. We expect most farmers to make more than break even this season. And the low Aussie dollar means that ag land in Australia is attractive to foreign investors. So for those reasons, we think investment in Australian agriculture will hold up reasonably well through this period.
That's Tim Hunt, Rabobank's Head of Food and Agribusiness Research. He was speaking there with Kath Sullivan. And speaking of foreign investment, one of the nation's most experienced fund managers says current moves by the federal government to hinder foreign investment will damage Australia's economy in the long run. The government announced all foreign investments will need Foreign Investment Review Board approval during the coronavirus pandemic in a bid to stop predatory takeovers. David Goodfellow, who headed Chinese investment firm Reefer Salutary and a Canadian pension plan, says ongoing foreign investment in agriculture will allow the Australian economy to bounce back quickly once the pandemic is over.
Look, I understand the government's anxiety right now, as I'm sure that's shared right across the nation, is that there are some businesses that are going to be under pressure given the current circumstances we're in with the coronavirus. And the last thing we want is for people to come in with a predatory nature to take advantage of businesses that aren't performing so well, to the point where down the track, if the economy recovers, which I'm sure it will, that most of our best businesses are foreign owned. So they're looking for ways to protect themselves. But they have put in a very broad-ranging measure this time in the restrictions now with FIRB that, you know, are going to flow on to some other parts of our industry maybe as a consequence, and agriculture is likely to be one of those industries affected.
Why do you think Australians and Australian funds don't invest more in agriculture?
Well, that's a great question. I know that there was a parliamentary inquiry into exactly that theme, but I don't know if there's been any clear answers, certainly not publicised, that came out of that inquiry. But it is evident that the Australian superannuation funds haven't been as active as some of the foreign superannuation funds and foreign investors in investing in our industry.
And David, just finally, with this new move around the approvals and foreign investment reduced down to zero, have you seen any signs on at the marketplace level at the moment to indicate that perhaps we are losing out on some opportunities, or is that not really transpired yet?
Look, it's too early to see real tangible evidence that it's affected things, but certainly there's conversations going on globally, I'm sure, about what this might mean to the timeliness of getting investment done. To consider that it might now take 6 months to put an application through FIRB and have that approved seems a very long period of time, particularly in agriculture where seasons come and go in a month, let alone 6 months. And getting crops in on time is critically important, as is getting musters done and what have you in the beef industry. So I think 6 months is too long. I think people should be able to make decisions much more quickly. But I'm thinking that perhaps these rules are put in place not so much with a focus on agriculture, but perhaps other businesses in Australia. And let's hope that there's some common sense that will prevail when it comes to assessing applications from foreigners to invest in Australian land, because it is so important to our future, as history has taught us for many, many decades.
That's Funds Manager David Goodfellow speaking with Liz Rymill.
You're listening to The Country Hour on ABC Radio South Australia and Broken Hill.
Where it's 22 past 12. Now, the coronavirus lockdown has certainly brought out the creativity in people, particularly through song, with lots of related parodies doing the rounds. One of our favourite here at The Country Hour has got to be the work of Peter Schiltz, a northwest Victorian farmer who writes songs and plays in a local band in his spare time. Have a listen.
Driving to a gig, it was gonna be big. Then they called my phone, said you better go home, we've got corona. See you tomorrow, corona. It's chaos there and confusion here, and I just thought it was a Mexican beer. There's corona. See you tomorrow, corona. Now I've locked my door and peeping out through a hole. I got my very last toilet roll. Peter, and I want my 4 meters. That's 2x2 just for me and you. So I'll stay inside and I'll sanitize, and the beer fridge is full, so I guess I'll survive this corona. See you on a corona. I can't have a roll at my local bowls, and there's no 40 team, but my house is so clean. Damn corona. See you on a corona. Don't give me corona, unless it's in a stubby of corona.
Look, I like the spray there at the end, the disinfectant spray. That is Peter Schiltz, a northwest Victorian farmer. And apologies if that melody gets stuck in your head for the rest of the day. Let's head off to the Weather Bureau now, because we're awaiting, hopefully, what should be a good weekend full of rain. It's good afternoon to senior forecaster Brett Gage. Hi, Brett.
Good afternoon.
When can we expect the rain?
Well, if you're in Port Lincoln, the front's just moving through now, and we can see on the radar a nice band of showers stretching between Port Lincoln to Cape Border, and it's just some isolated showers to further north. We've got some approaching the Ceduna and Venus Bay areas there, And this front will move rapidly across the south of the state today. And we've got a number of warnings current for conditions on and behind the front. So let's start. A severe weather warning is current for damaging wind gusts. Includes people in the Adelaide Metro, Mount Lofty Ranges, Lower Eyre, Eastern Eyre, York Peninsula, Mid-North, Kangaroo Island, Murray Lands, Upper and Lower South East Districts, and parts of the West Coast, Flinders and Riverland Districts. So pretty much most of the south of the state there. Look, any wind gusts we get will be fairly isolated and mostly associated with shower or storms, so we're not expecting widespread damage, but local damage is possible today. And it will probably stay out for quite a while because there is a second front coming through in the evening. This first front should reach Adelaide sort of around mid-afternoon and then move up into the northeast pastoral districts in the evening. But there is a second front sort of moving across the western coast, western and central coast during the evening. Now, behind that second front, there's a lot of cold air too. So that's brought us through our first sheep graziers warning for the season. And that includes the Mount Lofty Ranges, Kangaroo Island, Mid-North and Upper and Lower Southeast Districts. And we do have a marine wind warning current for all coastal waters. So the winds ahead of the front aren't too bad, generally 15 to 20 knots, but we're looking at west to southwesterlies at 25 to 33 knots, about all coast behind the front. Now, the winds will stay pretty fresh to strong southwesterlies tomorrow, and we'll see showers continuing across most of the agricultural area. It should be dry in the Riverland and perhaps up in the east of the Eastern Eyre Peninsula, so probably dry at Whyalla tomorrow. But slight to medium chance of showers across the remainder of the agricultural area, reaching a high chance along the ranges and in the southeast. And there's also some possible thunderstorms and small hail in the south of the lower southeast. Then as we move further ahead, the winds will be gradually easing, but just another weak system coming through on Sunday. We'll keep the showers going across most of the agricultural area, but maybe a bit less than on the Saturday, but nonetheless still a high chance along the Mount Lofty Ranges and in the lower southeast there on the Sunday. And then we'll have a ridge of high pressure starting to move in. So still a slight to medium chance of showers, mostly about coastal districts on the Monday. And then they'll just contract back to the southern coast on the Tuesday. Also some early fog patches along the west coast on Monday and in the southeast, and then on Tuesday over Eyre Peninsula. So cumulative rainfall totals, they're generally expected to be 1 to 5 millimetres over the northern agricultural area, 5 to 15 millimetres over the southern agricultural area, with 15 to 30 millimetres possible about southern coast, the lower southeast, and the Mount Lofty Ranges south of the Barossa Valley. Less than 1 millimetre is expected over the south of the pastoral districts. Befalls of 2 to 15 millimetres are still possible up in the northeast of the northeast pastoral district, mostly falling today. There has been some locally heavy falls up in those pastoral districts in the last 24 hours, and they're still possible there today with thunderstorms, but that weather should clear out by tomorrow. So it is possible that we could issue a severe thunderstorm warning for the far northeast of the state this afternoon, but it is marginal. So just keep your eyes on that space.
No worries. Brett, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Let's have a quick look at the far west of New South Wales. For the Upper Western District, tomorrow is going to be a mostly sunny day with a slight chance of a shower, going for a top somewhere between the low to mid-20s. And for the Lower Western District, a partly cloudy day with a slight chance of a shower, going for a top of around 20 degrees.
You're listening to The Country Hour. For more stories from across the country, go to abc.net.au/rural. On ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill, this is Isabella Pittaway.
Hello and happy Friday. Coming up this half hour, food and beverage producers in South Australia and right across the country are grappling with the flow-on effects of the coronavirus pandemic. For some boutique producers, it's left them with a surplus of product because the restaurants, cellar doors and cafes they normally supply are closed. For others, there's so much demand that they've run out of stock.
And I think there's been a big swing back to the general home baking, mainly of bread. Most of the supermarkets have run out of yeast, and we've been able to source some, and as quick as that came in, it went out. But we have got more yeast coming in, so that tells me that there's a lot of home baking going on.
And a story about flying pizzas and beer. We'll bring that to you a little bit later. Right now, though, it's just after 12:30 with the latest in news headlines. It's good afternoon to Matt Coleman.
Hello, Isabella. Adelaide hospital staff will have to begin reusing protective masks due to a global shortage. The N95 masks are being used to protect staff treating patients with COVID-19. The Royal Adelaide Hospital has started to collect used masks, which will be sterilised and reprocessed. The opposition wants the state government to introduce stricter border controls on top of current quarantine requirements. The opposition wants the state to follow the lead of Queensland and Western Australia and introduce hard border closures. Under the tighter restrictions, people exempt from the border closures, such as essential workers and residents, would need a permit or proof of address to enter the state. The state government will put nearly $6 million into helping the tourism industry get through the crisis. Tour operators can access grants of up to $10,000, while organisers of major events who've lost money can also receive funding. And a man will face drug charges after he allegedly tried to deliver cocaine and MDMA to a traveller who was quarantined in a Sydney hotel. Police say the 37-year-old was trying to drop off a box of fruit at the Sheraton yesterday when he was searched and the capsule and white powder was found. More news at 1 o'clock.
Thanks, Matt. Now, pork producers across South Australia are stuck with extra pigs after restaurants and cafes have cancelled orders because of COVID-19 shutdowns. For more on this, Bridget Herman reports.
SA pork producers have lost many orders due to shutdowns in the food service industry and are now needing new markets for that leftover meat. Beachport Berkshires is a boutique operation in the southeast. Owner Kate Wheel says they've lost more than 50% of their weekly orders since restaurants and cafes have shut.
We've been madly scrambling to try and find other markets for that pork that would normally go into those restaurants. We've got some good local markets in a local foodland and a local butcher, but it's sort of we don't have a lot of time to suddenly find markets for an extra 15 to 20 pigs a week that are a bit more specialised product. We had some heavier pigs that would normally go into a small good market, and quite a few people have now shut their kitchens for a while. They're just not going to be producing. And some of them that were producing, you know, had big orders for events that were all cancelled. So they had a lot of product on hand to offload anyway, let alone going and making more product.
You've moved some of your pigs into supermarket orders instead. Has that made up for the loss you've made on those restaurant orders?
Not at this point, because a lot of them have had a few extra, a spike in sales in the last couple of weeks, but it may not be enough to be ongoing, and it won't take on all the pigs that we were selling into other markets. So we've spent a few hours last week cold calling a few other retail chains or retail companies, but it takes time to build up networks with new companies.
You're a boutique producer who produces Berkshires. Does that complicate things?
Yes, it does. We have quite specialised markets that we sell into, and we don't have, I guess, larger contracts that we can automatically send everything to. We're always building new independent markets, but if there's a sort of fallout in one, we've suddenly got all these pigs that we've got to find another market for. And it is a boutique product, so it is always one thing we've found from the start is having to educate the retailers and consumers on, you know, what's so good about our product, but it's also getting them used to working with it. So it's not just saying, hey, can you take some pork? It's sort of describing what the product is and how we want to work with them.
And what about selling directly to the public?
We used to do pork boxes, and since we've had some more local retailers come on board, we moved away from doing pork boxes because we felt we had opportunity there that people could go and buy the select cuts they wanted of our pork from a butcher or supermarket, and it was a lot easier for us to then just do the wholesale side of things. But we've had inquiries, of course, in the past week, are we still doing boxes? So that's something we might have to work on again.
Beachport Berkshire's owner, Kate Wheel. Kate's experience is reflected in the wider industry. Pork SA Chair Andrew Johnson says while there's plenty of pork to go around, missing out on food service is impacting producers.
Pork in Australia, 20 to 25% is consumed through food service. It's not all gone, but a fair percentage of it. We need to, as an industry, and which is happening, I suppose, rechannel our pork product supply with our processes through avenues that our consumers, which are the most important to us, our consumers can reach.
Is it possible, realistically, to move all of that demand over to supermarket orders?
Well, it's not instant. So there is a lot of demand going through the supermarket channels at the moment. Just be rest assured to your listeners and consumers that butcher shops are a key part. They are open. They will not be restricted. And so there's a lot of avenues that people can access their pork products and meat products and all things. There's no need for consumers to panic. We're producing plenty of pork in Australia.
Are small boutique producers more likely to be affected, or is it really across the board that producers are seeing an impact from coronavirus?
Look, everyone's seeing an impact. And yes, there will be some small boutique producers that will potentially lose a high-end market. They will need to adjust and push their production through normal commercial operations. No, they may not get the premium. It's impacting us all. The pig industry, by nature, it's 365 days a year operation. For welfare reasons, we can't afford to shut the doors. We can't. We need to have people there operating our industry on a daily basis. We produce pigs on a weekly basis. If we hold pigs for a week, most producers probably be able to do that for a week, but you've also got 2-3 weeks of production coming behind you. No, you can't just keep them. They have to go.
Pork SA Chair Andrew Johnson. A small Berkshire producer on Eyre Peninsula is finding business is going as usual because they sell directly to the public. Warren Smith, owner of Minnaribby Berkshire Pig Farm near Coffin Bay, says sales have actually been a little bit better.
Well, the orders have picked up, I think, because everyone's eating from home now. We're not sort of interested in supplying restaurants or butchers or anything like that. We just sort of supply to the general public.
Are they asking for more pork?
They are at the moment, yes, because pork prices have gone up a lot. And as you know, lamb prices are really expensive and cattle and beef's expensive, so people are turning to pork.
That was Warren Smith of Minnaribby Berkshire Pig Farm finishing Bridget Herman's report. And it's a similar story for local gourmet food producers like cheesemakers. Robe Dairy sold most of their cheese through their cellar door and through restaurants. Owner Julie Hinchliffe says that with those avenues closing, they've lost 70% of their income in the last few weeks.
It's kind of hard because you make a lot of products, beautiful products for those restaurants, made by hand, made with love, and now they're just sitting in the cold room, you know, with nowhere to go. So the next thing after restaurants, we shut our little farm shop. That brings us about 55% of our income. So that was a big change. And so with losing those two has left us with supermarkets, so only about a third of our original income. There's no one to blame. You just have to accept it. You have to hope that it will be short-lived and that there'll be something there at the end of it. I mean, for us, you know, we feel grateful that we do have a few supermarkets that we sell in, and we feel kind of lucky that we have an online shop, and we've sort of looked at starting some home deliveries in Robe.
And what about all the leftover cheese you had? I understand you make your cheese in a particular way.
That's right. So here's the tricky part. So we're so small, it's just my husband and I. We milk 13 cows at the moment, so very small. And we make a very specialised French-style cheese, Brie and Camembert styles. they're what we call unstabilised. So they are made quite differently to your usual supermarket style cheese, which is made to have a long shelf life. Ours don't. Ours have about a 3-week shelf life. They become ripe and oozy and absolutely beautiful in that time, but 3 weeks isn't long. So a month ago, we were making lots of cheese, selling lots of cheese, and today we've got lots of beautiful ripe cheese sitting in our cold room with nowhere to go. It goes without saying we're eating some. We are trying to sell it through our online sales and through home deliveries. And in the supermarkets, we're putting specials on it. But, you know, it's kind of when you lose 70% of your sales channel, it's a pretty big gap to try and fill in a very short space of time.
Julie, you also have your own dairy. Are you moving some of the milk that you would use for cheese into some other products?
So we are diverting more of our milk into yogurt and bottled milk. You know, there's less value adding going into those two products for us. So it's definitely detrimental, but we're glad we still have that options. At this stage, I'm still feeling optimistic.
Robe Dairy owner Julie Hinchliffe. Adelaide Hills-based cheese producer Udder Delights are in a similar situation in that their food service and cellar door markets are shut. Owner Cherise Sullivan says revenue at the cellar door has dropped by 70%, but they are still able to open as a produce and takeaway shop. What's more, retail production at their cheese factory has increased and made up for the loss.
The sort of cheese we make, which is white mold cheeses, so your Brie and Camembert, fresh cheese and blue cheese, the majority of what we make is about an 8 to 10 week shelf life. At the moment, that is moving through pretty well. And my interpretation on that is people aren't eating out, but they would be having their cheese and wine at home. So at this stage, it's moving through okay. If we notice levels begin to build up, we will have to put the milk more into blue cheese. Blue cheese has about a 12-month shelf life. And we'd also look at maybe marinating cheese, which means putting fresh cheese and oils.
Just to clarify, demand for your product hasn't gone down. It's moved from one market to another.
We service the retail market and we service the restaurant market. So it's gone from servicing two markets just to the one retail. That demand has increased to the point that it's taken the restaurant sales.
You're a medium-sized business and you're also located in a, while regional area, still fairly populated area and also still quite close to Adelaide. Do you think this has helped maintain that level of sales?
No, I don't. The level of sale comes through Coles and Woolworths and Costco and all our independent grocers that we've got around Australia. So it wouldn't really matter where the business was, as long as the consumer all around Australia purchases. So we're not getting this demand exclusively through South Australia. We're actually getting it really strong all down the eastern seaboard.
That was Cherise Sullivan, owner of Udder Delights, speaking with Bridget Herman. Up next, the businesses that are being run off their feet because of an increase in demand. But first, let's find out what's coming up on Landline this Sunday.
This week on Landline, insects, the good, the bad and the ugly, especially a species called the fall armyworm, newly discovered in Queensland, which poses a major threat to crops.
I think we've all been caught so quickly that we just got to get through this season now with whatever method we can.
And how COVID-19 is affecting farming. That's Landline, 12:30 Sunday on ABC TV.
This is the Country Hour on ABC Radio South Australia and Broken Hill.
It's great to be with you this Friday afternoon. Let's head off to the Eyre Peninsula now. And the Cummins Mill has put the call out for milling grade wheat as demand for flour increases. Cummins Mill owner Bill Butterfield says they are selling flour as quickly as they're making it, with many households now doing a lot more home cooking. He told Brooke Neindorf he has never seen such a high demand for his products.
I've never seen anything like it, Brooke, as far as inquiry or, you know, people wanting product, mainly in the flour. And, of course, on the other side of it, there's a lot of stock feeds going out too, in particular sheep nuts, because it's that time of the year with the ewes lambing. And a lot of concentrates going out. But back to the flour again, I've never seen anything like this before, and we are just hanging in there with supply at the moment.
Where is the demand coming from?
Well, look, up until yesterday, it was right across South Australia, and now I've got interested parties interstate, so they're going to have to wait for a while. We're most they're independents, so they're not the the big supermarkets. They're the independent supermarkets, but and we do want to do business with them, but it's a matter of being able to get there. But we're looking after our own first.
It seems that flour is the thing that a lot of people are stockpiling. Do you think that is the case?
Well, one would think so, but I think there's been a big swing back to the general home baking, mainly of bread. Most of the supermarkets have run out of yeast, and we've been able to source some, and as quick as that came in, it went out. But we have got more yeast coming in, so that tells me that there's a lot of home baking going on, mainly with bread, and there is a little bit of talk about things like Easter buns, hot cross buns and stuff like that. But our bakers have been very busy too. So I think people are back to the old days of perhaps getting out and making a few bickies and stuff.
Bill, have you got enough grain to be able to keep up with the demand to keep things flowing?
No, good question there, Brooke. I was going to mention it. If there's any farmers out there listening that have got any APW, H2 or H1 or even ASW, any milling grade wheats, we would really like to hear from them, because the way it's going at the moment, we are going to run out. Or when I say run out, we're going to have to resource it probably back through the system. But most certainly, if any farmers have got some left over after seeding, we'd greatly appreciate to be offered that.
I know that we speak a lot about you being very proud of having local EP grain, but if you can get wheat from anywhere, will you take it to keep supplies up?
I would only take South Australian grain. Certainly would not entertain the idea of anything imported or anything like that. Well, we're not big enough for that anyway, but we do know that the big mills do that, and that's a no-no for me. But most certainly, if there was some grain from eastern side of the Gulf and fellas wanted to run some around, well, we'll gladly talk to them about it. I don't think we're going to run out. It's a matter of everyone being aware of the fact that, yes, we will be looking for it, and we're happy to give them a good premium for it.
How much would you potentially need, Bill?
The way things are going now, we probably need another 700 tonne at least, just to get us through on the orders that we're doing. But I am expecting a bit of a lull, you know, maybe in a month's time or something like that. I think there is a bit of stockpiling going on in the pantries, but who knows what's going to happen, Brooke, with the way this is. You know, it's certainly not letting up at the moment. Things have slowed up a little bit on Eyre Peninsula, but we've kept those shelves very full with Drakes and the Independents and a couple of little corner stores. But in Adelaide, our main lady in Adelaide, she can't keep up with them. It's like painting the Sydney Harbour Bridge. Once she's finished it, she's back onto it again.
That's Cummins Mill owner Bill Butterfield speaking with Brooke Neindorf. And a South Australian aquaculture business, which is based at Port Lincoln and on Kangaroo Island, is also being run off its feet. Yumba Aquaculture has seen a surge in demand for abalone from the United States, so much so that it's had to buy more stock from other farmers. Company director Anthony Hall says it's the first time they've had to buy abalone from farms they don't own.
Well, with the United States in particular, it's been very strong for us. It's been the result of an extended marketing campaign, but canned sales of our product, our prime product, which is canned abalone, have been exceptionally strong.
So could you give me some numbers? How strong have they been?
I won't give you actual numbers in tonnes, but what I can say is it's been so strong that we couldn't supply the demand from our own farms. And I've had to been buying abalone from the rest of the industry to actually fill these orders.
So can you give me a percentage idea, just something to put this in some sort of context?
Well, what I can say is that although you know, we've had very strong sales in North America, of course, there are other parts of the world, especially with the COVID-19 crisis, that have closed up, such as Hong Kong and China. But we're not reliant on mainland China. We've got strong markets in North America, Japan, and some of the other Asian countries.
And when you're selling your product into America, is it being sold just at the same price it was before?
Yeah, the same price as before. Obviously, you know, I think one of the key things is that it's a retail product. It's not going into the food service industry. So obviously, if you're selling to the restaurant market, people are seeing, you know, a real downturn. But we've been lucky that still the retail sales through the supermarkets and buying clubs have been strong.
And so how far have those gains in the United States, have they gone to offsetting any losses from the coronavirus?
Well, I haven't completely offset the fact that, you know, obviously demand is slowing in many, many markets. But it certainly meant that, you know, we're in no sort of financial trouble, and we can actually look to expand that canned business even further.
You said you've had to be buying from other farms that you don't even own. Is that something you've had to do before?
No. It's not a normal thing in the industry, but many of the other farms have had a live abalone product, and there's nowhere to sell that at the moment. So by providing them with a different destination where we can stabilise the product in cans, it works very well for them, and it's good for us. It allows us to satisfy this new demand, and we were just lucky that the marketing efforts coincided with this crisis.
That story there was from Lucas Forbes, and he was speaking there to Yumba Aquaculture Director Anthony Hall. It is 9 minutes to one. My name's Isabella Pittaway, and as we continue our foodie tour across South Australia, let's head now to the Clare Valley, where Pankara Foods is a paddock-to-plate family business that makes pasta for restaurants and gourmet products like snacks for consumers. But with restaurants forced to close around the country, owner Catherine Maitland says they've started selling their bulk pasta to the public. She says so far that means they haven't lost any revenue, even with the coronavirus crisis.
We've kind of shifted our focus a little bit towards some of our staple products, which is whole grain pasta. We also produce a gluten-free pasta and lavash. And the reason being is we sort of had pasta that was made to order for our restaurant customers. And because they sort of closed their doors due to the COVID-19 crisis, we were sort of left with a little bit of stock. And instead of consuming it ourselves, we decided to offer our bulk pasta to some of our online customers and our loyal customers. So instead of receiving or buying pasta in packs of 375 grams, they were able to, or are able to, purchase our pasta in 5 kilo bulk.
Are many people out there buying 5 kilograms of pasta at a time?
I know, it seems crazy, doesn't it? It surprised us because I guess people are really, the purchasing behaviour has changed because more people are looking to buy foods such as flour, pasta, milk, things that they can stockpile during this time. So for them, having 5 kilo pasta is fine because, you know, they can put it in their pantry and it stores well, and just take what they need.
What exactly was the immediate impact on your business when a lot of those restaurants and cafes closed? Was there a big drop off in revenue?
Well, we haven't really seen that as yet because we were pretty quick to kind of turn the negative into a positive straight away. So this particular offer that we offered for our online customers, we had, the pasta was made for restaurants. So we quickly turned around and said, right, let's put this online and see if this offer takes off. So that particular stock has now been used for our online customers. So we haven't seen a drop in revenue at this stage.
How many people have ordered the 5 kilo boxes so far?
So in the first week that we made the offer available, we received 99 orders online, which we were quite overwhelmed with. That continued to increase as it was gone on.
For your business and the people working there, how busy a period has this been?
It's been crazy, actually. We are a small family business. So, you know, like any small business at the moment, we've really had to see we can adapt to these challenging times. And so, yeah, we've looked at new opportunities, ways to sell our products to the consumer, and this particular offer is just one of those opportunities.
That's Pankara Foods owner Catherine Maitland speaking there with Lucas Forbes. And some news just at hand this hour, particularly for the farmers out there. Livestock SA and Grain Producers SA have advised that Growing SA 2020 has been cancelled because of the coronavirus pandemic. However, it says that Growing SA 2021 will be held in August next year at the Adelaide Hills Convention Centre. It is 5 minutes to one. I've got something a little bit different for you now. It's Friday, so you might order a pizza, maybe enjoy a beer or a wine. Well, what happens when you're self-isolating on a remote cattle station? A roadhouse in the Northern Territory has taken customer service to new heights by flying pizza and beer to local cattle stations. Like many businesses right now, the Dunmera Roadhouse, about 300 kilometres south of Katherine, is not seeing many customers coming through the doors. So the owner and pilot, Gary Frost, is coming to them. He says flying pizza is definitely not a money-making exercise, but he's hoping the unique service will bring a few smiles.
The current stages, all the surrounding cattle stations properties are locked down for 4 weeks, so nobody can go anywhere. They're limited to how to get their supplies and refreshments. So we thought we might do something to help them out a little bit, to lighten their load a little. We make pizzas at the Dunmera Roadhouse anyway, so we thought we'd get all the pizzas together and see if they're interested. We can fly them out so they don't have to leave the properties. We still have our social distance when we land there. And also, because of the release of the liquor licensing, now we're able to take alcohol with us as takeaway, and they can receive their alcohol allocation as well now.
So flying pizzas and flying beers.
Flying pizzas, flying beers, that's right, flying high.
And are you offering any other items as well while you're out on the plane?
Yes, we do. We take, if they have, we collect also, we're a mail agent there. If we have any mail bags or any freight been delivered there, we take that with us as well.
And toilet rolls, did I hear that correctly as well? Rumours getting round, flung a few toilet rolls around?
As long as they don't come loose in the back of the plane, that's right.
I guess what sort of prompted your decision to extend that service? Were people asking for this, or you just sort of thought it might help out?
Well, two things. Well, first of all, it was becoming very quiet down the roadhouse, and I'm a person that does not like sitting on my hands doing nothing. So I thought, let's do something to help these people out that were saying they're locked down, and just to maybe help create a little bit of interest in it and a little few more dollars coming back into the business just to keep it ticking over a little bit. That was all. We've never decided to make money out of it. It was just more of a courteous thing and just to make it, keep everybody comfortable.
And how far are you travelling from the roadhouse?
We've only been doing once about 100 kilometres so far, where we're going to extend it, probably go to about 300 or 400 kilometres starting from next week.
And what sort of response have you had so far for what is, I guess, a bit of a trial at the moment? So how have your customers responded to the idea?
We have been getting quite good response, actually. Everybody's quite excited about it. It's something unique, I suppose. And I do not know if anybody else has ever done it, probably in the world, as far as I could research. And we try to find a name for it. And yeah, research said, no, nobody's ever done it. I suppose the cost of it is a little bit prohibitive as a commercial venture. Because we're not doing it as a commercial venture, we're just doing it as a friendly gesture, just to try and help people out, create a bit more atmosphere, I suppose you could call it, and just everybody's happy and something different. And their children will come out running out, pizza, pizza.
There you go, flying pizzas and beers. That is Gary Frost from the Dunmera Roadhouse speaking there to Carmen Brown, making sure that no one is missing out while they're self-isolating. Sonia Feldoff is on your radio after one. Happy Friday, Sonia.
Happy Friday to you, Isabella. Well, we know that in just a few minutes the Prime Minister is due to be talking with us again with the latest update, and so we will be bringing that to you as soon as he takes to the podium. But also joining us, and you might be surprised that you could spend the weekend with Kate Sobrano. There is a new way of doing that. And we're going to tell you all about it, and Kate will join us to tell you how that can happen. So that coming up today. And relationships. If you're in a new, fresh relationship, should you be getting together if you don't live in the same house?
Thank you very much, Sonia. Have a safe and happy weekend. It's coming up to news time, 1 o'clock.
Back it up. This Sunday morning, daylight saving ends and clocks go back 1 hour. On time, all the time, with ABC Radio.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.